very busy. Many important matters require king's attention.
I'm king now. King, 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 king now.
I am king.
I am
king.
I am
kiss it.
I am
kiss it again.
I am
turn.
Your fingers or your
king
tongue.
Doesn't
fingers
discuss
your
battle plan.
He's one,
but
your fingers or your tongue.
I am the king.
I'm telling mother.
Welcome to the Joffria podcast. My name's Bubba. And does anybody even want a podcast after that? Oh my God, was that brutal. Joining me, as always, is Catfish. Catfish, how's your psyche right now?
I can't wait till we get in and talk about this, but basically, the character who just died at the end of this episode, this is the reason why I didn't read book five, because I heard that this character bites it, and I'm upset because always in my head, I thought it was a Song of Ice and Fire.
Right.
I thought at the end, it was going to be Jon Snow and Daenerys coming together.
Sure.
Right? He is ice. She is fire.
He may be iced.
So this death just...
Oh, my God.
It just frustrated me so much.
Maybe he's going to come back as a White Walker.
And who is that voice, everyone? It's our special guest. We brought him back for the depression episode.
Mork likes it when people die.
So appropriate.
He's the most happy person here.
So, Mork, how are you doing? Do you even want to talk after that? Dear God, depressing.
Well,
episode.
Thank God Mork always wants to talk.
Oh, God.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Can we talk about the strain?
Folks, you may know Mork from our other podcast. It's called Got Your Milk. It's based on FX's The Strain podcast. It's going to be starting up in July, and somehow, some way, blood-sucking vampires are going to have going to be
gonna,
maybe
gonna
more,
be more
fun.
Fun.
More fun.
I don't care who dies.
Oh, my Lord. Listeners, you may also want to get onto a show which actually has some whimsy on it. It's our third podcast here in the network. It's called Lost Hope, a Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell podcast based on BBC America's adaptation of Susanna Clarke's book, Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell.
And that is a light frolic through the woods.
Oh, my Lord.
To this.
I hear great things. I'm also doing a Three's Company podcast.
Oh, it's a rewatch.
Oh, really? Awesome. Now, it's a spoiler alert. You just let Mork know that it was that Three's Company
it's
is not a
air.
New show anymore.
Oh, no, sorry.
TV Land airs new shows. He could have thought.
Don't tell him. There's an exciting cast change after season two.
I only read TV Guide for the articles.
Okay, guys. Guys, we're going to have to do it. Let's go round the horn. Ugh. We just watched the 10th episode of season 5 entitled Mother's Mercy. So we're going to start.
Yeah, there was a lot of Mother's Mercy.
We might need mercy after watching that painful episode. Catfish, let's go to you. What out of 10 are you going to give this episode?
Now, I'm going to give this the highest ratings, and this is sort of there's a strange dichotomy.
Okay.
Because so many incredible things happened in this episode.
Right.
I'm going to give the episode a 9.
All right.
But the level of excitement it gives me to watch next season now is a 3. So I thought the episode shook things up so much. But it makes me less excited to watch it in the future. We're really losing people we care about.
Oh my God!
Yeah. At this point, the most sympathetic character is Littlefinger.
It could be.
Yeah.
Oh my Lord! All right, I'm coming to you, Mork. Mork, what is your rating out of 10 for this, the final episode of season 5?
I'll give it a 3, and it's only because the costumes and the sets. And the sound editing was so amazing.
Oh, come on. You've got to at least appreciate Stannis getting his horrible comeuppance.
Oh, my
But Lord. Don't you think his comeuppance would have been maybe getting flayed, too? If they're gonna have the Boltons all of a sudden be military geniuses.
I swear to God, I don't need to see another flayed body. I don't need it.
Well, fine. Then you can't come with me to Tahoe.
Okay.
All right.
What about you now, Bubba? He gave it a 3. I'm a 9. If I made a wild guess, I would guess it was somewhere between 3 and 9, but I could be wrong.
Catfish, I am going to rate it higher, on the high end of the scale, and I'm going to give it what I like to call a double S.
Double S.
Yeah. I'm going to give this...
Sad 7?
No, I'm going to give this 8... suicidal specials out of 10.
See,
I'm going up to 8 out of 10, and I right now feel terrible. I feel like I've had about 50 gut punches, and I'm going to give the show credit for giving me these gut punches.
They were real gut punches. Yeah.
I feel
some gut punches too, but the reason I feel punched in the gut and much lower is
how low do things hang?
Well, we'll find out at Tahoe. Oh, you're not coming. No, but the reason why you felt it like this was because of what happened in seasons 1 through 4, not because of what happened this year. I mean,
oh, you believe because we've come to love the characters, or what do you mean by that, Mork?
That's exactly what I mean.
You know what? Say it next time, Mork, and I won't have to explain it for all our listeners.
Oh,
he's drawing it out. He's drawing it out.
Much like season 5.
All right, now somehow we got to turn these frowns upside down. I don't know how we're going to do it.
Well, first, can we do some bragging?
Bragging?
Yeah, let's do some bragging.
Because, what do you mean, Kev?
Well, two things. Sure. One, we're talking about what you wanted to see.
Right.
If there was anybody you wanted to see, and you brought up the name, didn't you? Benjen Stark? Did you bring up Benjen? You were talking about all sorts of people we hadn't seen in years.
At the end of last week's podcast, we said what we wanted to see in episode 10. I said I want to see Dorne again and have Dorne have a point. And I suppose the point was some people will not give up their hatred and their need for revenge. I said I wanted to see the Greyjoys again. I said because I felt we've seen them so long. And then, Catfish, you pitched, listeners, who else do you want to see? And Gendry and Benjen was one of them.
Right.
And guess what, folks? I don't want to see Benjen. Don't tell me that you found Benjen because I know you're just leading me to the slaughter. But
I want a little props to myself.
Prop yourself. Let's hear
it. My Joffrey of the Week was Sepp Blatter, and I warned everybody that it was another 6 to 9 months before there was going to be a vote and that maybe he wasn't quite dislodged from power yet. And it turns out this week there's now rumblings. He may not decide to want to leave. Who's going to take him out? Nobody. He's like Joffrey.
Right.
The real-life Joffrey.
Amen. What I want to do to get the frowns upside down is I want to give away some prizes.
Oh,
I mean, I'm just...
Everybody loves I've been prizes. Kicked in
we the have been gut. Talking about this all season long.
Oh, man. This is the best.
All season long. So if you tweet it out with hashtag Joffrey of Podcast or the Joffrey of Podcast, you're in the bowl that we're going to draw from. Or if you gave us iTunes review...
Right.
You would also be put into the bowl. Now
we're going to do those reviews later.
That's
but
correct.
Anybody who reviewed us even up till today or
correct.
Tweeted us newly today is in this bowl right here that must be about 650 names.
It's a large bowl. It's the mountain of bowls.
It is. All right. So let's get to this first prize. Mork is our special guest. You're going to draw the name out of the bowl. And this first prize is a making of Game of Thrones season 3 and 4, a.k.a. the happy time.
Oh, good.
So,
good,
Mork,
okay.
Reach into it and let's see. He's pulled out a name. Mork,
here
tell everybody
go.
Who do we have?
DJ Tim Hines.
DJ Tim Hines.
No way. That's unbelievable.
Oh,
unbelievable.
My frown is upside down.
No, what's great about this is I tried to pitch DJ Tim Hines as the winner of a prize for a contest that he was the only person who submitted for. So he won fair and square. This was not rigged. Amazing.
Amazing.
So he didn't get what I originally wanted him to get, but which was the... DVD, Blu-ray, digital edition of last season's Game of Thrones.
Wow.
But he got a beautiful book. So DJ Tim Hines, you see what happens? Unlike the world of Ice and Fire, sometimes things work out for good people in this world.
That is could he trade the book in to be president of FIFA?
He probably could.
Do not mess with Joffrey.
We've got two other great prizes we're going to be giving away through the rest of this podcast. But guys, it is time to jump into Mother's Mercy.
Ooh.
We got to break this episode down. We're going to recap it and review it. And listeners, I want to mention that even though many people may feel like we're at the end of the books, believe it or not, folks, we're not technically at the end of the books. I'm going to give some vague stuff now. The main thing I'll say is that there have been casting notices sent for season 6. And those casting notices are looking out for 3 characters who are from the 4th book who haven't been introduced yet on the show. So they will probably be in, and I assume some of those stories they encounter in the 4th book will be in the show as well.
Does this count as a spoiler alert? Are you going to mention who they are?
I'm not going to mention who they are.
Okay.
We keep our show spoiler free, but I will say that there are some characters who make out, you know, three, I suppose. How many characters make it out of this episode alive that still have chapters left?
Well, I'm going to give a hint. This is a quick preview. It's a quick hint. Is that one of the characters that makes it out of this episode is my Joffrey of the season.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Ooh so, la la.
All right, guys, let's get into this episode, and maybe at the end I'll talk about some season six.
Not those while I'm here.
Not while Mork is here. Mork has not read any of the books.
What books?
He's been very good about avoiding spoilers. So let's talk about this real quick. When we saw the previously on Game of Thrones, and we saw Benjen Stark mentioned, you know, the thought that he left, and he hasn't been seen since. What
Your
did you guys think?
Dropped.
My jaw dropped. I thought this guy hasn't been seen since season one. This is an incredible pulling from history. So, what did you guys think? Anything, or what did you guys think?
I certainly thought that it was going to be related to Benjen and not just as a name drop to get John out to shiv him.
Right. Apparently, they didn't want to shiv him in his office. They're like, that blood would stain the wood. Let's get him outside.
No, they want it out there. But finally, I would just say this about the shivving.
Yeah.
Finally, there will be no more foreshadowing. Every time we saw Ollie give the side eye to John this year, finally, that has been fulfilled.
Finally, Ollie did something about it.
He did.
Lazy Ollie did something.
Mork,
about
did you have any thoughts when you saw Benjen in the previously on?
I was certainly excited, but I didn't know how he'd avoided us when we've been north of the wall, we've seen the White Walkers, we've been to Craster's Keep, so I was intrigued, but
really do kind of the Rick Steves four triangle tours of north of the wall.
We sure did.
And we did not see Benjen.
Nope. No, we didn't. In fact, this season, season five, only as we watched the opening credits just now, it only had one new location on the map, and that was Dorne. Even though we went to Volantis, we didn't see that on the map. We went to Hardhome, but I suppose the map doesn't go north of the wall. So season five, not short on death, but short on opening credit scenes. We begin in what I'm going to say is of a depressing episode, maybe the most depressing of the bunch, and that is Camp Stannis.
But, and again, one of the things that I think is great about this episode is the great reversal that happens here. It starts off, the ice is melting. It's
right.
Like, wow, okay, even though he did this horrible thing, it's actually working out.
Yeah, right? But Stannis' reaction to, he's not happy. He's, you know, yeah, Melisandre's thrilled. She's like, the ice is melting. Stannis doesn't really care. She walks into, and it's really melted. When you go outside the tents, it's brown mud. But Stannis, she's trying to cheer him up. She's even, dare I say it, a bit frisky. And
She is. Remember the last time he was the one who made a move, and she was like, not now. And this time he's like, no.
Right.
Well, you know, fire gets her blood boiling. Again, she says,
yeah,
that she sees him,
mm-hmm.
You know, she doesn't see him. That's
right.
The thing. She sees blade banners burning. She sees her on the wall. Again, no mention of she doesn't see Stannis. And he never asked her, do you see me in these visions?
Where am I? Why is it that I'm always out of the room when you're having a vision?
No, it's just, you forgot to ask. You know, he never asked the most important question.
Yeah. Mork, what did you think of Camp Stannis? We see Melisandre give him this news, but then it's pretty much all downhill from there. Like, people keep coming up and talking, and one of the first guy, you know, like, it's three bad newses in a row. The first guy comes up, he's like, a lot of these sellswords that we hired, or maybe just some of your army, abandoned.
And they took the horses with them, the ones that they hadn't had to eat after the barbecue last week.
Right. They all deserted. A guy comes up and he's like, what's the bad news? And the guy doesn't even want to say. What did you think of this incredibly terrible stuff, Mork?
This is, it feels like a Monday to me.
Remind me not to hang out with you on Monday.
I don't know about you guys.
This Monday, huh?
Yeah. No, it was, it felt like we were about to see Stannis get what would be a hollow victory, be even more hollow.
Right.
With, you know,
Stannis is shell-shocked. He is like he's got...
And Melisandre was, PTSD. Too. Did you notice her face when he walked away.
Oh, my God. Well, he was been shell-shocked the whole time. But, yes, that was the first time we ever saw doubt on her face.
Right.
And he's like, obviously, it can't be worse. Whatevs, just show me. And then it turns out, right?
Well, this isn't so bad,
Mondays
can
be worse. You know what he needs?
What does
he need?
He
needs, in his tent, he needs one of those cat posters to hang in there, baby.
It'll hang in there.
Yeah.
One of those easy buttons.
Yeah, right.
So Stannis goes.
From our non-sponsor, Staples.
Right. He Stannis goes and he sees his wife. And Selyse, she...
Again, the whole time, we talked last week, Mark, that we thought she's been mean to Shireen the whole time and has been a true believer. We thought she might be the one to light the fire, but it turns out she was the one more torn up about this.
I think she sort of went out like a sucker because she believed in the Lord of Light. She was down with her daughter being burned alive. If she had any cojones, she would have jumped on that pyre with her daughter and burned herself alive.
Okay.
Mork.
Yeah.
Mork calling for more female death on this show.
No, I'm calling for if you're okay with burning your daughter alive, then you should also burn alive. That's my policy.
She wasn't. She tried to save her, and she got held back.
She could have jumped on the
phone. It was too little too late, to be completely
honest.
I agree with that. Let's go.
Is there a card for that?
Hallmark is missing an opportunity. Is that what you're saying?
Big market, people.
Stannis just looks absolutely defeated, and I have to be honest, at this point, he's just been told Melisandre was seen riding away from
the one horse
that was left behind.
Was she hiding a horse?
yeah, of course.
Where was the horse?
Well, she's got that huge, her gown is so huge.
That's true.
She had a little Shetland inside.
Right,
so that's horrible. Melisandre, I never expected Melisandre to abandon him, but that's just rough.
So Stannis, at this point, did you guys know it was a lost cause? Did you hold out any hope that Stannis could somehow beat these terrible Boltons?
I didn't think so. At that point, I thought it was hopeless. And Stannis, it's so interesting because they really went out of their way, I felt, to make Stannis a more sympathetic person this season. So we kind of wanted to him. But then by the time he died, I was like, yeah, you deserve it fully.
I thought he deserved a little worse, to be honest.
So his troops, they've been you think he deserved worse?
He burned his daughter alive. He should have gotten flayed or something.
Well, I'm going to
say almost every person that's died on this show, one of us has said they deserved a worse fate. That's how bad people are on the show. Despite how horribly they die, it's not bad enough.
Well, he really did. He did the worst thing ever on this show. There's nothing worse than this. I mean, Ramsay is a psychopath. So it's like, okay, fine.
So
this
he gets
his daughter.
Pass?
No, this is his daughter,
okay.
Who, you know, a few episodes back, there was that great speech about the grayscale and the doll and the
daughter
and da,
let's
da,
just
da,
say
da.
If Ramsay had a daughter, eventually, you could ease, not, if he did it, you'd be like, I saw it. I saw it the whole time. He would be
probably
someone who would do it.
But he would change in a heartbeat.
All right, so guys, I just want to pound through this story because it's all depressing. It's all tough. So Stannis, he's marching all his remaining men on foot. They don't have any siege weapons. They don't have any food left. This is a Hail Mary, and they're going to lay siege to Winterfell. And it just obviously didn't seem possible, but the kind of
shellacking.
The worst thing is, he's like, all right, well, we just walked here from wherever. Let's set up. We'll get ready for the siege. And then, well, bad news comes in fours because... No, there'll be no waiting.
No, there will be no waiting. Now, we cut away from Stannis' army and go inside Winterfell, and we see the Bolton army kind of... You can't tell they're getting ready to march. I couldn't. I thought it was just a typical Monday, as Mark likes to say.
Right.
But we see Sansa used her tool, which I thought she'd use as a weapon to take out somebody, maybe even Ramsay himself. She instead uses it to free herself from where she was locked into the room.
But not very slick. First of all, she leaves the tool on the floor.
Right, should have taken it with her.
The other thing is she leaves the door wide open, so anybody passing by would know she's not in there anymore.
Now, she's got her hood up, but she's still making eye contact with many people in Winterfell. They should have recognized her, you would think. Podrick Payne. He's out collecting wood and rabbits, and it doesn't look like he and Brienne even have the hotel, the barn they were staying in before.
Right.
Now they're just staying at the remnants of a wall.
They've been totally
when your accommodations
fine.
Fall.
Yeah.
This,
well, they ran out of their money.
Brienne needs the Wyndham Wizard, a.k.a. Tormund Giantsbane, to get her a better place when staying
exactly,
in the north.
Exactly.
So Pod comes up and he says, "Hey, guess what? Stannis' army and Brienne." Oh my goodness gracious.
Brienne?
Of course she walks away right before the candles lit in the tower.
But of course we have to remember make a vow, but she has an earlier vow to avenge.
How many vows do you need?
Well, you know, you get as many as you can to keep
Vows, more personality. That's my feeling on
you know,
Brienne.
Some vows they don't pay enough. You need to have two or three vows. It's like you've got part time vows.
That's true.
If you have one full time vow that pays enough, you're good.
Right.
That is true. This felt like a kind of a shoddy mirror to Arya missing out on the Red Wedding, which turned out to be a good thing, but,
right.
You know, so close, but so far.
Everything's oh so close.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but let's say, remember, we, and a lot of people, what I said last week was I wanted Sansa to save herself. I didn't want her to be, I wanted her to do a positive move so she saved herself.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's unclear whether that happened, and it turned out that other people were right, that this sort of became Theon's story too. And I was didn't want it to be.
Yeah,
Theon's
he doesn't
story.
Deserve. He doesn't deserve to be in there. Yeah,
no, he
and
does.
It doesn't deserve.
And
to, I know his redemption is not important.
Who cares?
To me.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm just gonna say this randomly throughout this episode.
Please
Where's
do.
Littlefinger?
He's not in this episode. The last we saw him, he's in King's Landing.
Okay,
he's
do
there.
You want it to be? Should it be a rhetorical question every time, or should we answer differently each time you ask?
Right, keep asking.
Keep asking. And then we'll just do whatever comes naturally.
Done.
So Stannis, he's being the general, even though he's got no chance. He's being the general. He's trying to set up siege weapons, and then when this soldier came up to him and said, "Sir,
no,
there's not going to be a siege." hilarious. I was trying to be a general in my head. I'm like, okay, listen, they've got horses. You got to somehow fight that advantage. Run into the woods. Horses in woods won't be as strong.
Climb those trees.
Right. Or trenches or something.
Well, you can't dig trenches
dig
when they're coming at you right now. I'm just saying that if I were Stannis, I would have immediately said, soldiers into the woods. We got to find cover. We got to. But maybe once again.
Can I just point
out? Run away.
Yeah, at this point, do run away. I think Stannis, this was
He's
a suicidal
got,
mission
yeah,
for him.
It's a suicide
he was like,
mission for
okay.
Sure.
I just want to point out, and you know, we get to watch in this lovely setup with Fit and Trim, and the surround sound. You could hear that soldier say, "Told you so."
No, you didn't.
to Stannis as he walked off to his bloody
death. And Sansa's watching this battle, and it isn't a battle; it's a slaughter.
Yeah,
we knew when the show killed King Joffrey that this story we're watching is a tragedy. And call me crazy, I still of the two. As I said last week, I'm still Stannis, but not anymore. I mean, I wanted him to win. I wanted him to beat the Boltons.
Right.
But this is just an epic.
He does
epic
end up
slaughter.
Go back in the forest, so maybe he took your advice, if that makes you feel any better.
You see the numbers here, and you know this is not happening.
Right. Well, still run to the woods. Do something. But instead, you see Stannis' army actually surrounded by the horses. They've been flanked
do,
on it. When you've been flanked on every side, that's called a circle.
I think I would do the end of Life of Brian when the Suicide Squad comes up. I would just say, all right.
Spoiler alert.
Done.
Spoiler alert.
Sorry, always with the spoiler alert.
So they conveniently keep the slaughter from us. Stannis and a group of his soldiers did get to the woods. You see a terrible sight of a guy who's only got his upper torso left trying to crawl away. And Stannis
is still alive, but it's good because we need this closure with Stannis.
Well, I'm going to go crazy. Is it closure? We didn't see him get killed.
Another punch.
He's done.
Another punch. I can't take any more.
I liked. Did you like that these two Bolton soldiers come up and Stannis takes them out?
Yeah,
I like that. I liked him killing these bastards.
Yeah,
I'm fine with it, but you know, I don't root for him. The guy. He burned his daughter.
Yeah.
I mean,
I know it was going to end bad for him,
fight.
But it was like one last hurrah.
Nice to see.
Now, did you think that Brienne would find him and Brienne would take care of business?
They've foreshadowed it a lot. But call me crazy, and crazy. This is my book knowledge. I thought somehow he, you know, maybe just he would survive or somehow. Because, spoiler alert, Stannis is still alive. This battle has not happened in the books.
Okay, well, I mean, do you think that they've,
and
that,
also, let me say,
just jumped forward a little bit? I mean, you think this is the way he's going to go out?
Well, let me say two things. I think they say they want seven seasons. If you want seven seasons, you've just got to jump forward. So it's possible they did that. But let me, fiddlesticks, now I forgot my second point to this. But this is a very non-Martin death, if Brienne kills him right here, which, you know, let's be honest, she probably did.
Yes.
What I mean by that is that Martin, in the books, if somebody wants revenge, they never get it. You know, somebody else may kill the person who wants revenge.
But the fact
that Brienne wanted revenge and Brienne kills Stannis, that is just not the way Martin of the books ever works.
It's too much of a just and rewarding world for revenge to be enacted. That's not the way Martin likes it. He likes random acts of violence.
Well, are you guys happy that Brienne got this revenge?
I am.
I have no feelings about Brienne.
I didn't care too much about Renly, but I just wanted Stannis to get it, and it was nice that somebody who had had righteous vengeance against him.
Don't you guys think if Stannis is going to buy it here, wouldn't it have been just more fun and more entertaining and hurt a little more if he hadn't actually burned his daughter alive and he still died? Wouldn't that be better? I'm just going to throw that out there.
Well, okay, it's the idea is that this guy,
that he gave up everything.
He gave up everything.
That's a sort of a George R. R. Martin thing where you give up everything for an ideal and you still get screwed in the end.
Fair enough, but I don't even know if you can call it an ideal.
So everybody's favorite Bolton bastard, Ramsay, no longer Snow, but Bolton, he's out mopping up. You know, there's no reason for him to be out there and killing the remains of people.
What do you mean? The man loves his job.
He does, he does.
He doesn't even put in for OT.
No.
Is this the same? The guy found his legs.
No, listen.
It's the guy from earlier. He found his legs.
If you are going to be crawling away on a battlefield, just zip it up.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
No, I'm with you. I think the first rule of fighting, being sent off to fight for some lords that you don't care about, just pretend that you're dead. Stay down. Just stay down.
The only thing I wondered while this scene was going on, was where's Littlefinger?
Okay.
Finally, someone said, where's Littlefinger?
I can't wait to edit all these out. So Sansa has put the candle in the upper tower.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yes.
I'll save it.
Sansa has done it, and she's trying to avoid people. She's walking along the battlements, and of course, what goes from bad to worst? The Boltons have won, and here she is, Ramsay's bitch, Miranda.
Yep.
And at least this you could all see coming, right? You could see that Reek, a.k.a. maybe now Theon, was not going to let this happen. Or did you think it was going to happen?
No, I didn't think that he was going to do it here because of all the provocations that have happened. I just don't know why this is like goes over the line. Because I only say that because in my mind, I don't believe that she's actually going to do something to Sansa. Like,
that's her, exactly.
Right,
she's the side
Ramsay
piece.
Ramsay would be very upset if he was not the one who was first
it's
allowed
his property,
to hurt.
Exactly.
To hurt, yeah. So yeah. I never believed that she was in trouble, so I didn't know why that pushed him over the edge.
Well, it was so dark, the battle that happened right before this, that I thought, I didn't think Sansa would die, and I did think Miranda would get pushed off, but I thought Miranda might get a shot in. That's how dark this episode is. But right before Miranda tries to wound
Sansa, she sort of does get a shot in.
Well, she gets a shot, yeah, but she doesn't. Well, this is a Greedo shot first.
Who moved first? Reek, to stop the shot? No, Reek was the one who pushed. Reek was the one who pushed her, and then she let loose her arrow.
And Miranda's.
Yeah, I buy that.
Miranda's death, that is a painful death. That is a long fall. I was shocked at how long this fall was. Youch, it was worse than Bran's. Maybe she'll get the sight now. Maybe Miranda will live and have the three-eyed raven and crow talk to her.
So everybody comes back, and now this I'm just stunned by. to me, this is like the end of Thelma and Louise. Like, I look down, I can't even imagine. It doesn't matter. That snowdrift would have to be like 20 feet high and have to be very lightly packed snow. I mean, this is like a jump of death.
Well, how many stories would you say this jump is?
I'd say
the camera can trick you sometimes.
Three, four stories.
So how much snow would you need to survive this? And what do you think? Did they survive?
You'd have to have like 10 to 15 feet of snow, and it can't be packed.
Two. It's at least three stories. Yeah,
because if it's packed and if it's ice, it's as hard as a ground.
As someone who grew up in Minnesota,
they should be dead.
They should be dead.
Yeah. I've experienced snow on the East Coast too, and unless it's fresh snow, it's not soft at all.
All right, well, but I want you guys to help me with this. Is Reek / Theon dead? Is Sansa /
Sansa's not dead, but realistically, the best
you don't think she's
the best she can hope for is a couple of broken legs. They should not be able to get away. It's unrealistic.
What if Theon or Reek cushioned her fall?
Even that's ridiculous. That's like saying the elevator plummeted to the ground, and at the last second I jumped up.
Yeah, it works.
Exactly.
It works.
It's worked for Bugs Bunny. All right.
Kinetic energy. Yes.
So, please, can I get an answer? We get these stupid sidetracks. Who's alive? Who's dead? In your opinion, Mork?
I think she's alive. I don't understand how.
Reek, what about him?
I don't care. Yeah, sure.
You know, that's the answer, people. People listen to this podcast to hear the official "I don't know and don't care" response of all the Game of Thrones podcasts. They want to listen to the one about the hosts who don't care and did not move on.
That's why we're the only ones who have the guts to not care.
I
will say this.
Oh, my fucking God. Jesus Christ. Why don't we just stop reviewing the episode?
I think they're both alive. This can't be the end. Obviously, it's not the end for Sansa. I don't believe it can be the end for Reek as well. But there's too much. Again, there's too much we put into them, and to not even see the death, they wouldn't do that.
Okay.
Has there been anyone that we've seen where we didn't see them die? A main character? No, we saw someone swing a sword. We just saw somebody swing at Stannis. Yeah. To have somebody. I feel like
they're both
alive.
You're probably right, but it's.
But I agree with Mork. It's outrageous.
It feels very quick also for her to all of a sudden trust him when she's got nowhere else to go.
She's got nowhere else to go.
Sure. Yeah.
But
putting
her hand in his is a little,
it's a little romantic.
Next season, let's set up the North. It's got 5,000 wildlings and one giant. It's got the Bolton still strong in Winterfell, though now without a Stark. And it's got Brienne and Pod hanging out, waiting for a candle that's already burnt down.
Presumably, they will have to hook up with Sansa. I don't know how she gets out otherwise.
Well, that's your prediction. I want to hear
prediction.
And you're not allowed to say "I don't know, don't care." Fucking prediction.
I have never said "I don't know" or "I don't care."
Jesus Christ! All right.
I've said "I don't know." I'll be honest. Sometimes I don't know.
Okay.
But I always care. I think that Sansa hooks up with Brienne and Pod.
Okay.
And we have the first. Fun road trio.
So
Theon is not there.
He's not with them. That's a good point. It's a foursome.
I think Reek goes back.
Yeah.
I think he goes as if nothing happened. He goes back into Winterfell. And I think Sansa will hook up with Sam and Gilly, thank you.
Yes, people listen to the show where they don't know any of the characters' names. All right. That's a good prediction. I will say that if Sansa and or Theon survive, I don't see him hooking up with Brienne and Pod. Now,
it's another close miss.
Yeah, which the show, just like the close miss of the candle.
I agree.
Well, maybe they would have to because Brienne wouldn't leave Sansa behind. She'd still be waiting for that candle. And so maybe by running into them, that's the way that gets her to not wait for a friggin' candle all season.
Well, there is one thing that we do know,
yeah.
And that there's going to be a storyline next year that we didn't have at all this year, which is Bran.
Bran, yeah, sure.
Oh, good, yeah.
So perhaps somehow they get together with Bran.
All right. So let's say goodbye to the Winterfell area of the North, and let's go across the Merry Seas to a storyline that's somehow happier. Let's go to Braavos, everybody. And we see it's To Catch a Predator, Sir Meryn Trant. And he is he's pulling out the stick like he wants to work at the house in black and white and smack everybody. But instead, he's got three underage prostitutes. And when did you guys figure out that one of these prostitutes was Arya Stark, a.k.a. the girl who should be no one?
When she didn't make a noise. Right away. Right away.
That's part of the training, yeah. Getting whipped, no whimpering, no screaming at all. So, yeah. You knew it was coming.
I mean, I was surprised when it turned up and she had taken the face of the girl that was mean to her, that she didn't have her original face. I thought that part was cool. I expected it to be her.
Wait, isn't this... Sorry, whose face is she wearing?
She's wearing the face of the... I thought it was the face of the girl who was mean to her at the House of Black and White.
No, this is the face of the girl who's... Remember, she helped drink the water. She says, like, oh, this will cure you.
It looked a lot like... That's all I'm going to say.
It's hard to tell.
Yeah, no, it does kind of look like her, except imagine at least 10 years younger.
Okay. Right.
So this is the face of the girl who a couple episodes back, Arya was sick, and the father was like, I've tried everywhere, and Arya talked her into drinking the water. So Arya, this is a great reveal, but is it a great kill? Did you hate Meryn Trant enough for him to suffer such a disgusting death, and did you like her getting her revenge in such a horrific, bloody way?
I think it would have been better if he died. You know, this whole thing with the girls, and it's awful, and, you know, and that's why this is so bloody. But I wish it had tied back more to the, you know, to the dance teacher and in season one, because that was really, you know, for me, that was the beginning of the end of the girl that Arya could have been. And now she's turned into this, which is not pretty. But I miss Syria.
Well, I don't know how we could have. I mean, they did it in the previous one, but I don't know.
I saw the stick, and I guess I was hoping she'd. I don't know.
I don't know how we could have made up for that. But I agree that the show was very smart to make him a disgusting pedophile, so that we were okay with the manner in which Arya dispatched him. We were reminded of what a despicable...
But throughout. I mean, he was the guy who beat Sansa. He killed the teacher. He was Cersei and Joffrey. I mean, his only redeeming quality was working for Joffrey. But he always deserved a rough
It's true,
death.
But I just don't know how we could have, you know... I mean, we could have had him previously on, but it's been a while since we were separated from that. So we had to have another reminder of why he deserved to go this way. And I was happy to see him go this way.
Oh, you were? I thought, do you still like Arya? I thought, as silly as it is, the less bloody the kill, the more I'm able to enjoy it. And Arya, having her turn out just so stone terrible. It was very unsettling.
Well, I mean, let's face it. She comes from a breed of Starks.
Right.
And there are either one or two things. Either they're cowardly or they're bloodthirsty.
That is fair.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so Arya...
But I thought this was the one moment when she was most like Joffrey.
I didn't like seeing these things, but once again, I gave the episode to Nate, and this was one of those scenes where it was so intense, all this Bravo stuff, that it really kind of just blew me away.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It was so wild. And the great thing was we didn't have as much setup as, in other words, we didn't see her sneaking in.
No.
It was boom. It was right to the three girls and then boom.
So she tries to get the face back here in the House of Black and White. And who's waiting for her but the no one couple? No one guy and no one girl.
Let's not even be specific, because sexes can change. Let's just say the no one twins.
That's a good point. Now, this, once again, stays tense, where Jaqen, or the guy we think is Jaqen H'ghar, but who knows, he says only death can pay for life, and it looks like he's going to poison Arya.
Right?
Did you guys think Arya would die?
I didn't think she would die. I thought she'd be knocked out and then gone, transported. So in other words, it's like, you win against our rules. So, boom, they ship her off somewhere else. Her training is done.
All right. What did you think, Mort?
I thought she was going down. Yeah. I thought, and I cared.
No, fine.
There was only one person who could have saved her if he'd have been here.
That's true.
Littlefinger.
All right.
Or the Hound.
So then what did you guys think of this crazy reveal? He's like, somebody's, you know, only death can pay for life. So to save her life, Jockin 1.0 drinks the poison.
From here until the end of the scene, I just thought I was hallucinating. I didn't know what the F was going on.
And it's, yeah, and it's who, I don't even know what I'm watching when it comes to this guy anymore. It would have been great if she was stuck there without him, but at this point, is this even the same guy who she met way back when in Harrenhal? I don't even know.
Well, that's a good point. Who knows even who he is? I mean, you know, when we start doing the peeling back of the masks, and it's like, you know, it's like a Benetton ad.
Exactly.
I was like, what is going on here?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a crazy scene. She thinks Jockin's dead, but theoretically no one is dead,
right?
And here's no one number two. And then she goes through this, pulls a face off. Honestly, one of these – do you think you recognize any of these people when she peels a face off?
Somebody actually looked like my driving instructor, but I don't know if that's what they were going for.
That looks like Dennis Hopper. Did you see how that one face looked like?
Yes,
Dennis Hopper?
And then of course, the last one's her.
She
kind
sees
of
her
that.
Own face.
But then – then again, I have – this is my hugest WTF moment of the entire episode and perhaps the season. All of a sudden, she's like starting to go blind.
What, did she go blind because she poked out dude's eyes, or is this because the girl was blind?
Well, the episode doesn't explain it. Why do you think she suddenly goes blind?
Not enough carrots in her diet. I have no idea. I think it's because of the how she killed Maren Trant. But we will have to wait and see.
Yeah, there's some sort of thing. You know, I haven't quite figured out what the whole thing is. You took a life that wasn't yours. Maybe there's a punishment for that. I don't get it. But, you know, it's interesting, but super, super WTF.
This is for me, what, as much as I like him as a character, and I like Bravo, I like the city, and I like this, I mean, it's a great room. I wish I had a room like this.
Sure.
Fit and Trim has a room like this.
Yeah, but did you see how much sweeping in
there's
it is constant sweeping.
Fair enough. True that.
And the candles. It takes like an hour to light the candles.
It's a
in
lot of
joint.
Candles, but they smell so good. No, but this is the most – of all the things in this show, this is the most just magic that I don't understand. This is the most fantasy that I don't understand. It's not really based on anything. The dragons, I'm like I buy that. The Lord of Light, it's tied to something at least. This is just magical, and it's not as grounded as I'd like it to be.
Okay,
that's interesting because it has gotten the more we've gotten to know the weirder it's gotten. At first, it was like, okay, this guy's really good at killing, and you think like, okay, fine, he is super quiet and whatever. And then all of a sudden, there's face peeling and going blind, and
it's
right,
Mission Impossible 2.
It's all the Mission Impossibles. This is where Tom Cruise comes for all those faces right here. What do you predict will happen in Bravos next season? Let's hear it.
I think she goes and works for the bank. That's what I would like to see. She gets a job sweeping up the floor at the bank.
Now, last week,
right,
I said what was going to happen was that this was going to be a Star Wars situation where, like, Luke goes to train and then he abandons his training to deal with personal issues.
Right.
So I no longer think that that's the case because this has sort of taken on a life of its own now.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm
how about this? What do you want to see happen?
I want her to get rescued. I mean, what's great about her is she's been off on her own basically even when she was with the Hound. And she needs someone to actually give her, you know, help her out, give her hands.
I mean,
let's
remember what has to happen here. I mean, technically, and again, I think that the show has done this better than the books that I read. You know, we're seeing more and more that, you know, there's this whole Game of Thrones, but that's really like the JV fight. At some point, everybody has to come together, and they got to fight the varsity.
Yeah. Is anybody
the team that every time they kill somebody, they gain another member of their army?
Is anybody going to still be alive to join the team, the living team of the living? I mean, this is we lose lots of people here.
Well, are they going to be able to cross the Narrow Sea?
You mean the White Walkers?
No,
yeah.
The White Walkers just have to get over the wall.
Yeah. Right.
We need to get everybody back to Westeros. This is where, which is, I mean, that's where we started. So we presume we care about that.
Right.
Even though many of the people that we care about are scattered away from Westeros. But presumably that's the fight. That's the big fight coming on. So I would like to see Arya come back together with Perhaps Sansa, perhaps Bran. I mean, at some point I would like the Starks to get back together. Let's get the band back together.
Okay. Let's do it. I'm ready.
All right. So we're going to leave Braavos and we're going to go back to Westeros, to the southernmost kingdom in Westeros. And we're going to Dorne and we see this goodbye scene. And I thought the big shock of this scene was this whole Dorne stuff. I thought this was just a nice goodbye. But then I thought the real shock of the Dorne scene would be Jaime telling Myrcella, hey, I'm your father. And her saying, I know, and I'm cool with it. But then...
I did get a little tickle, because that kiss... Again...
You mean when Ilaria Sand kisses Myrcella on the lips?
Sometimes they do a little something in the camera to like draw attention to it, like when Bronn got that slit. Mm-hmm. Here they kind of came close up, really close up on the kiss that sort of plants something in your head. So either one or two things happen. Either you go, whoa, and I went just a little bit, whoa. Or... Mm-hmm. When what happens comes up, you're like, I know exactly when that happened.
Yeah.
So it's smart the way they do that. But Bronn gets a little, oh man, Bronn, he gets a little bit more action. The lady knows him. The lady knows her dude.
God bless Bronn.
He had a hard time walking to the boat. I don't know if you noticed that.
Oh,
but
brother.
His pants were a little tight.
Oh, brother. So Jaime presents this infamous necklace, this Lion of Lannister necklace, to Myrcella, and he's like, hey, don't ever lose it again. And then they have this heart-to-heart where Jaime is stumbling, bumbling. He's like our podcast.
And
he's saying a lot.
I thought this was going to be a hard conversation for him to have. But she's pretty welcoming. You know what happened? This is what happened. I told you that Dorne is like the San Francisco of America. So once you go there, you're like, hey, all right, I'm open. You know what? I understand people's different lifestyles.
Yeah.
I'm totally cool with that.
It's probably a good thing for everybody that she did die, because we know that, you know, she's saying, hey, I think it's cool. So basically she's telling her dad uncle that she's okay with incest. And I think that would have been a bridge too far.
I do, too.
For even this show.
Is there something you're trying to say besides she's open to incest?
Well, I'm glad we didn't have to see that.
Okay. All right. Well, good point. Now, when she starts bleeding from the nose and we realize what happened.
Oh, my Lord. Right? That was such a shock when she started bleeding from her nose.
It was amazing. But then immediately I was like, oh, that freaking kiss.
Yeah.
Now, I was a little unsatisfied the way this ended because – there's no way if you're 100 yards offshore and your daughter dies, you're like, all right.
Or your daughter gets sick. You don't turn around, go back. Let's get her to a maester.
Go back right away.
Right.
Exactly, because –
her husband or her betrothed is the crown prince. I mean,
right.
Come on.
Get a maester.
He's going to come in, right? And not only that, but if they figure out what's going on – I mean, all they got to do is go back and Doran's going to be like, boom, done. Or even Bronn could say like – yeah, I know this exact thing happened to me. So even if she dies right away, they turn right around. Definitely they're not going to take the – now that if Myrcella's dead, they're not going to take the prince back to King's Landing with them.
Gets thrown overboard.
Right. <Yeah. laughs> So, I mean, maybe something different is going to happen, but I expect them to turn around right away.
Yeah, they're 100 feet away.
But this happened. It seemed to me this happened faster for Myrcella than it did for Bronn
when he got.
Bronn was like, seemed like Bronn was at least a day later.
I thought they kissed and then it's been a while.
Yeah, they did. So maybe that happened faster. But Bronn got his right into the bloodstream too.
Oh, I thought she gave him a kiss. That's how she gave it to him. She gave him a kiss in the cell.
Bronn got it when they were having the fight.
Right.
And they closed up real close on him getting cut. And she had it on the blade. And then she gave him the antidote right from her locket.
After flashing him, right. Which she didn't do this time, so maybe this antidote is not as strong as what
without nudity?
Yep.
It requires nudity to activate?
So we cut back to the pier. And we see Ilaria Sand and the three Sand Snakes are watching the boat sail away.
Saunter off.
Ilaria's nose starts bleeding.
Doran's got to take her down.
I thought, to be honest, Ilaria Sand might not have taken the antidote. Might have, you know, just allowed herself to die too, and be like, my love Oberyn's dead.
Instead,
she goes to her necklace and takes the antidote.
That probably would have been the smart move. I mean, it's not going to end well for her. So
no.
She should have just.
Oh, my God.
No. She's in open rebellion now because. Well, remember how third chances.
Okay. He doesn't believe in third chances. But remember how last week Doran said, your rebellion's been put down. And all the viewers were like, rebellion? It kind of felt like you and three Powderpuff Girls. And now. Now it's a rebellion of. It's still a rebellion of four, but it's a rebellion with its first success.
It is.
Way to go.
It is.
It's not bad as rebellions goes. I mean, it's pretty effective.
It's pretty good.
Sure.
It's pretty good. I feel like they only need to hook up with, like, just one, maybe one key person to activate the whole thing.
Okay.
Littlefinger.
Fair. Wait a minute.
You know where Littlefinger is? He's with Prince Tommen, who was not a Joffrey, who's just. What a putz Prince Tommen is.
It would have been good to see that's a curious thing that we could talk
about
Tommen now.
What Tommen and Marjorie were doing?
What the heck?
Yeah, where was Marjorie? Where was Loras?
What's been going on with Tommen? And I think the only reason we can't see him is because, I mean, I don't know. What's he doing? Just sitting in wailing for his mother? Like, you would think he would have a little bit more power.
He probably went into her room and got in under her skirts in the closet.
He doesn't. Oh, my. You're right.
Real quick?
Yeah.
This whole season, Jaime's been he has not been a man of action. He has not been
a man of smart action. He invaded Dorne without a plan.
That fight scene was like a Star Trek original Star Trek fight scene. You know,
a lot of people didn't like
it. Well, yeah, because they had to hold off because in a real fight with that many people. They couldn't have held off all the sand snakes, especially with the ones like spearing. Fitton's very, very anxious about the one who spears.
Well, we all are.
Does this mean, let's predict, and it's tough, where do you see Jaime going? Where do you see what's next for Jaime and what's next for Dorne? Is the crown now going to have to go quell a rebellion in Dorne? Does the crown have to answer? And I assume they do with troops.
Well, the only way I can see this making any sense, because to me, you're right. I guess I'm right, because they should turn around right away. They are like a half hour from shore.
Yeah.
That's where they need to go. To make it more interesting for the story, I would just pitch this. Okay, she's dead. There's nothing you can do. What do? We have a prisoner. So let's take him
back
to Westeros.
Right,
they're in Westeros.
Back to King's Landing. That's the only way that I can buy that storyline, because they should turn around right away.
But I don't think that Trystane is going to be, you know, he's going to be pretty pissed, and they all know who probably did it. I don't see it becoming a full conflict between them. I think it's just they turn around and they round up the Ilaria and the Sand Snakes, and you know, that's it.
Yeah, but see, that doesn't sound like it's got enough vibrant conflict. That's all I say is I believe they should go back, but I think for the story they won't. So this is an interesting.
It is interesting, but I also think based on what we've seen, you know, at Hardhome, and they got to be getting close to the wall. So all of the interstitial fighting becomes it's conflict, sure, but it just doesn't have the impact that it really should. It's the junior varsity, as you said earlier.
Well, right, but they got a couple more and. Bubba believes two and three quarters seasons.
So the thinking, they're gonna go half season. So is the thinking next year will be, you know, last episode? It's the begin of the war to end all wars, the fire and ice war.
I would imagine, and we didn't see the White Walkers in this episode, but I would imagine that either 8, 9, or 10 next year is going to see the White Walkers. Breach the wall, or at least gather outside the wall with all their giant army and all people who've been dead, no matter, you know, for how far back can the White Walkers bring the dead back alive?
Right.
Think of how many wildlings and stuff and animals must be dead north of the wall. I would imagine that is where we get to at season six.
We've got to be honest, though, that the things that we know that take care of the White Walkers are Valyrian steel,
which isn't
a lot of it.
No.
Dragon glass is not a lot of that either.
But we have dragons.
And dragons. Yeah. Well, which no one has proved, but I've got to believe that, you know, we just need a big barbecue fest. But there's only three dragons. They're small dragons, as dragons go.
How do dragons feel about incest?
Okay, all right, we are way off.
The same Stay way the on Lannisters target. Do.
Fearless. This is why. This is why we get such great downloads, such keen insight
is
into
this
the
why
show. All right.
I'm asked back so often.
All right. So let's go across the narrow sea to Marine, and we meet three eligible bachelors. Bachelor number one is the half man. Bachelor number two is hung up on his girl who just left him high and dry in the fighting pits, Dario. And bachelor number three,
Mr. Grayscale.
Mr. Scaly Skin, it's Sir Friendzone Jorah. And this is just a great opening shot. I really like, once again, everything's miserable, but I do like this opening shot of the three guys. Just absolutely positively.
It's also, considering what's happened, it's also probably the funniest scene of the episode.
Yes.
I mean, they're all sitting there. They're mopey. They're all bickering with each other. You know you. You can't do this. Yeah, but you can't do that. It's funny.
No, they're great, and I hope we get to see more of these boys together. Cause...
Well, we're not going to see this threesome together anymore because as the season ends... Grey Worm comes back. He's like, oh, boy, I recuperated long enough to miss the fight in the fighting pit. Oh, thank God.
But to give it to him, he does still look quite weak.
Yeah. Well, you know, you atrophy a bit.
How much does Grey Worm weigh?
He didn't get the sexual healing that Sam did. That's what you need.
Well, yeah, but there's a
reason for that. As far as we know.
No, he didn't get it. How could he have gotten it?
No, we're still not sure whether it's root and stem or just the stem or just the root. If it's the root, he can still take care of business.
As soon as this is over, I'm getting a dictionary. I have no idea what you're talking about.
All right, I want to jump to how this lays out for Marine. Dario and Jorah are going to go north in search of the queen and her dragon, Queen Daenerys.
Right.
Those guys shouldn't be good friends. They both have the hots for
and
her.
They both look each other like, well, actually, more Jorah looks like, I can't wait to get my scaly hand on some part of Dario's body.
How long does the grayscale take to...
it's unclear.
We don't know. Yeah, it's unclear. How long would you want it to take? If there are only two more seasons, theoretically...
How long do you want it to take? When do you want to see more visible signs of Sir Jorah Grayscale?
I would like there to be like a, you know, Spartacus style bathing sequence with Jorah and what's his name?
Good to know.
And then that's how we'll know that there will be serious grayscale.
So,
do you like how about this? Do you like that Dario, who was very jealous with his star, kind of stands up for Jorah more than Tyrion did? He's like, you know, the queen, the Grey Worm, and everybody's like, the queen kicked him out. And he's like, well, that was before. He saved her life again. Maybe she likes her. Dario is actually being a good bro here.
Let's just say that Dario several times, his father was single, and he would go out to the club with his father. Sure. And he never had to worry about competing with his father for a lady. That's the way he feels about Jorah. Oh. Like, no worries here.
Okay.
Let me bring Grandpa along.
All right.
I'll look great next to him.
Yeah.
You should do that.
I'm going clubbing with Grandpa.
Now, your question earlier was, how does this lay out for Marine? My answer is, Marine is in 10-time better situation now that Tyrion is in charge.
And Varys. Don't forget the spider.
Right?
Varys
Tyrion
with his
Varys
little birds.
Is in charge instead of Daenerys, who still has not learned really how to be a good leader. And I guess she's not going to learn by Tyrion's example because she's not there.
She cannot see him.
Let's have some predictions. How do you think the team of Grey Worm, Missandei, Tyrion, with advisor Varys, is going to do in quelling this rebellion of the Harpies and everything? Let's have some predictions. What do you think might happen? What do you want to see happen?
I think Tyrion will have it taken care of in a week and a half.
Oh, boy. That is... You haven't been watching this
show
too long.
I'm not going to say a week and a half, but let's say this.
Yeah.
They did show Tyrion... handling a lot of different complex situations in King's Landing.
Right.
And I think that he is by exactly far the best ruler on this entire show.
Who's still alive.
Yes. Well, just by the very nature that he's still alive means he's a better ruler than those who are not living.
Yeah.
So, were you guys shocked to see Varys, who was...
I wasn't, because you pointed his name out in the credits.
No, but you were shocked to see him here in Marine.
Where else would he be if I knew he was going to be on the show?
I think he's
smart
enough.
No, he was on his way to Marine. I'm surprised I didn't see him earlier. right? He probably looked for Tyrion a little bit.
Right.
Couldn't find him and said, well, I had my way to Meereen. What I find interesting is he claimed that Tyrion abandoned him. And that's not quite true. What
right.
happened?
Tyrion didn't say,
let me just say this. I got stuffed into a bag, you know, and I got dwarf tossed about 12 times.
I thought he was being a little facetious with that. But now, so Varys is here and not in Westeros. Now, does that mean anything?
Well, you've seen what's happening in Westeros. Forget that place. Maybe Meereen's better.
No, it certainly is. I mean, it certainly is.
Well, I just thought it was very odd if he was going to be a Meereen. What took him so long?
Exactly. I hear. Yeah, because there was a lot of the roadshow. They took a lot of twists and turns there. You know, Jorah took Tyrion on one of those infamous shortcuts that took twice as long.
Never ever works.
No.
Well, maybe Varys was doing some, you know, he had to set the groundwork. He doesn't, you know, this isn't his home. He's got to set up his spy network. That takes a little time.
It takes a little bit of time. Yeah, if you want to do it right.
So everybody is off looking for Daenerys, and Daenerys is up on top of this mountain range. And who does she see? Nobody, because she's by herself with Drogon.
She sees Drogon.
She sees Drogon, and she still has no control over him. She was able to fly on him last week, but today she tries to climb on him, say, hey, we got to go home, got to fly home, and he doesn't.
Yeah.
How is she going to train these dragons?
For a second, I thought he was trying to, like, squish her to like, get her to quiet down.
Yeah.
She was like, leave me alone.
Well, when she asks, does it hurt? What, is she, the spears?
Well, that's the thing. I did not see the hole in his wing. We saw a lot of his wing. I didn't see the hole in his wing we saw last week.
Well, his wings fold, so maybe it's been folded inside, and so we couldn't see it. But Drogon, this is like when you're like, you want to take your dog for a walk, and he won't get up off the couch.
He's tugging.
Like, yeah. Right.
It's funny. It's last week when she just got on and flew away. You're like, wow, that seems like that was too easy. And it turns out the only way you can do that is if the dragon really wants you to.
Yeah.
Because this time he just kind of like, you know what it was?
She fucks her off.
Yeah, no, she went to one of those country and western bars and tried to ride the mechanical bull, and it was no go.
The first time, it's always a little tricky.
Yeah,
I've paused the screen on a shot here, Catfish, where you can see that hole in his wing.
Oh, no, I thought it was much bigger last week.
Well, true. That looks pretty big. I mean, that's pretty hardcore hole. You wouldn't want that
plane. Last week when I saw the hole, I thought there was no way this dragon could be aerodynamically sound.
All right.
In any case, he is injured.
Oh, yeah.
And the problem is, I guess he's just tired. We see the detritus around, like, you know, he's had a little bit of a snack. So maybe he's just logy after having a big meal.
Yeah, is he bloated? What's happening?
I think
he is.
Well, there's a lot of food.
He needs gas
around.
X.
Yeah. He totally does.
He needs Pepto.
But he's
harmless. So in another great example of her leadership style, and basically what I've determined to be her intelligence all around is Daenerys decides.
You're not speaking of intelligence. You way to talk away from the microphone
Daenerys.
No, this won't take any editing.
Daenerys
decides
to take a little walk here because no worries. She's out in the middle of nowhere.
Right. Yeah, that always ends well in this story. Now, I was actually surprised by this, and I think that's always a lot of fun. I'm not clear. Is this a Dothraki welcoming party?
Well, that's the thing I'm glad that you said that because to me it reminded me. They didn't seem Dothraki, but it seemed that same kind of situation that it was a big group of riders and maybe.
They look Dothraki.
Don't you think? Hold on. Let's look at them. She can hear them coming, and they, just like Stannis' army got surrounded. Look at that guy's outfit. He's got the braids.
He does look very Dothraki.
He's got a shirt that says, I'm Khal Drogo's cousin.
they're holding the, how do you pronounce
the
it?
The
curved swords. This is a Dothraki horde. Now, the last time, and she takes off her wedding ring. She doesn't want people to know because so many people were upset with her. Remember, way back in season one, when she married Khal Drogo, and she was like, no raping, and then Khal Drogo fell off his horse, and half the Dothraki abandoned her in the night. And
now,
so I think she took off her ring because she doesn't want people to know.
Do you think they practice this? They have somebody stand in the center, and what they do is they do, like, this is the whirlpool move?
Right, how many Dothrakis do you need? Suddenly, we see one small woman, Everybody come!
Well, the Dothraki are fierce warriors.
Right. They're fierce warriors. She's the mother dragon.
But they're scared by anyone under 90 pounds and 5 feet.
It's that hair. It's that silver hair. It's shocking.
So, are you guys excited to see the Dothraki back in the story? They've been gone for so long.
My only irritation with this is, is that the whole season, presumably we spent the entire effing season and we spent this entire time with Dany, with her learning how to be a good leader.
Right.
And she's never quite learned it. And then I thought, okay, at least if she's counseled by Tyrion, she'll learn some things from Tyrion, because he handled things really well when he was in charge of King's Landing.
Okay.
And now it's like we've kicked all of that aside, and I don't know why we spent all this effing time in Meereen.
That's a good point, but what's to say that she doesn't, you know, get on somebody's horse and takes the horde back? They're on her side. They're welcoming her. They know who she is. They're big fans.
But see, it's not – Bubba has convinced me that even though they're Dothraki, he doesn't believe they're on her side. If she was – if they were on her side, I don't think – or she felt they were on her side, I don't think she would be hiding her ring.
Well, that's the way I interpreted this scene.
Was it the ring for her almost husband who got killed last week? Is it?
It was her Hisdar ring. She's like, guys,
what
I'm single.
Ring was it? She had a ring.
It didn't look like that. Didn't look like a Marinese ring. That looked more like a Dothraki ring.
Well, it's tough to say. But what do you guys think of the effects work here? It was a yes or no question.
Okay.
You're excited that the Dothraki are back.
Absolutely.
I'm not, because
you're
even
not.
If they're on her side, it's sort of a. She's got an army again, but it still doesn't mean that she's learned how to rule.
Well, Tyrion will help her.
And why did we spend all this time and then she's out?
Well, maybe there's, as we've heard so many times, there's a difference between conquering and ruling. And maybe this is just a sign that, hey, what do we know about the Dothraki? They're great conquerors. They conquer and then they leave. You know, they...
Right,
sack
but she
a
needs
village
to learn how to
leaves.
Rule. That's the problem. She already knows how to conquer.
Well, but she didn't leave Meereen. Maybe by seeing these Dothraki, it'll teach her how to sack and leave. She got stuck in Meereen. She got stuck in a quagmire. Maybe that's what it represents.
Right. It was Daenerys' Vietnam.
It's totally her Vietnam. I can absolutely see that.
Yeah.
No, I'm glad they're back.
All right. Any predictions? Is she in even more trouble?
Well, this is what, for me, was rough about the whole episode, was there was all of these... It was just too many cliffhangers, and so at a certain point, it's like, I'm just confused. I don't know. Are they happy to see her or not? I don't know what happened to
whether
Sansa
they are or not. Eventually, I feel like she's going to lead them, but that doesn't advance the story. That takes the story back for me. That takes the story back a couple years.
Well, maybe she was never supposed to leave. Is the idea? And once again, I'm just throwing stuff out. Maybe
right, but if she wasn't supposed to leave, I mean, then let's have one or two episodes of her in the quagmire, not an entire season of her in the quagmire. If this Meereen thing wasn't supposed to teach her to learn how to lead and to be a just ruler, because presumably in the end she's the one who's going to run things. She's got
the
dragons.
Key word there is presumably, though.
Right. Right. Yeah, she's going to run things with. As I thought, Jon Snow. Oh, wait.
All right, well, let's hold off on Jon Snow, and let's get to King's Landing. King's Landing
now, let me
is
say this.
Normally... Sure, interrupt again.
I will. If I had not known that this was from the books, and if this wasn't from the books, I think people would be more outraged than it is, because this is like...
What is this most debilitating? Explain, hello.
What Cersei goes through here.
Oh, yeah.
Her debasement, the shame thing, is so horrible. I think if it had not been something that George R. R. Martin wrote and people weren't able to say, okay, well, at least that's part of the canon, so to speak, of this, that people would be outraged by this. I mean, it's a brutal scene.
It's totally brutal, and I hear what you're saying. But number one, it's nice that she's, you know, over 16 years old. So she's presumably a little bit tougher than, you know, all the other girls who are getting...
brutalized on the show.
Exactly.
Right, but it's still another example of a woman being...
For sure, but this woman has done horrible things to basically everybody for the entire time. I mean, starting, you know, throwing Bran off of the bridge. I mean, you know, with Jaime.
Right.
So I think... You know, it wasn't pleasant. I think it went on a little more than it had to go on, but it actually kind of fit for all the stuff that she's done over the years.
I can't wait to see people's reaction to this. Because when Cersei, a few episodes back, was first captured by the Faith Militant and the Sparrows, I saw so many people just on Twitter saying, yeah, she's getting what she deserves. She's getting what she deserves. And now that she goes through this just brutal treatment, are people going to feel sorry for her? Or are people going to say, this is what she deserves? Or it's like, so many people in this world die, and so the fact she survives is great?
I think whether – it doesn't seem like she's not really penitent. She's just saying whatever she needs to get
right.
done. And I mean, I think that she's freaked out by the whole thing and debased, but maybe it's just me. But I don't believe that she's been all the way broken down. I think she's had a traumatic experience, but I don't think she's been broken down.
No,
she'll be a different person.
Yeah, she's got the mountain with her. She's back.
Whoa, spoiler alert. How do we even know that's the mountain?
We don't. You're right.
I want to debate that when we get to it. But I want to start back at the beginning where we start with Cersei in her cell. And she just looks completely rough. We haven't seen Margaery in her cell in forever. We haven't seen ever Loras in his cell.
Well, presumably they're not in their cells anymore.
Presumably. We don't know.
We have no idea.
Right. We have no idea. She is just absolutely miserable. In comes the Septa, I like to call Septa Ratchet.
Septa Linebacker.
Septa from Toph.
And and so Cersei just finally breaks, but she doesn't break completely.
Right.
Because she confesses, but only to sex outside her marriage with cousin Lancel.
Only something that she's protecting someone can prove.
And she's protecting Tommen.
She is protecting Tommen. She's protecting herself that, hey, I did. She's not confessing that she had anything to do with King Robert's murder. And this is just brutal. Cersei snaps a little bit. When she's with the High Sparrow, she snaps for a little bit.
She does, but I think that even makes her look more like she's absolutely telling the truth.
Oh, because she broke.
Right,
because
she said, yeah, okay, I did this, but he was horrible. So
sure.
Yeah. And he's like, let's just cut to the chase. He's like, because you've confessed, you're still going to have a trial.
Uh-oh. She's like, oh, great, a trial? What?
If I'm her, I leave immediately for Casterly Rock.
Yeah.
Forget this trial.
This one, by the way, is this whole scene is kind of a good news, bad news situation. Back and forth. It's like, good news, okay, I accept your apology. Bad news, there's going to be a trial. Good news, you get to go back to the Red Keep. Mm-hmm. Bad news, you've got
to
do it
naked
and with people shouting slurs at you. Yeah. So,
yeah.
All in all, fair to me.
It's kind of like, do you want to hear the good news first or the bad news first? Or the good news first?
Or the really bad news first.
So, she does get out of this. She does get to go see her son. We don't see that scene, but she does get out of this prison. And you just want to talk about, I want to get through it quick. Mork, I'm with you. The scene in the show and a bit in the books too just goes on too long. Because
right now we did this scene as part of one of our point of view from the Joffrey point of view chapters from the book.
Right.
Because obviously in the book Joffrey's still alive,
of course,
and he experiences this. So I, even though I haven't read fully in the books, I did know this scene from the books, and again, it was very brutal in the books.
Yeah,
and they didn't flinch from that here in the show.
No. And it is just brutal seeing somebody stripped down, scrubbed, and I assume that those aren't, you know, soft sponges. That's kind of, you know, Brillo pad sponges.
Yeah. Right. And then there's another good news, bad news, because when she goes up and is presented before everybody, she's got her clothes on again.
Right. And she's got a new haircut.
Right. She's got a new haircut. And so we're like, okay, it's going to be fine again until...
Sure.
He says, and naked to the world, a shing.
Yeah, this is just terrible. I would say for much of this show, people have hated Cersei. And she's brought down by people. She's brought down by people that I think we've grown to hate as much. Don't we hate the Faith Militant? Don't we hate these Sparrows? Don't we hate all of this?
I'm sort of confused as to how quickly they've grown and basically taken control of...
Well, I believe it, though, because they've been oppressed for so long. Remember, in this show, as I've said before, when the families fight when there's struggles for the throne, the little people suffer. And then when the fight's over, the little people's situation is no better.
Sure.
So they're in a constant state of oppression. Right. Well, yeah. And when I say little people, I'm talking about Tyrion,
of course. Right. Of course. He has suffered the most. So,
do you think that this is long enough, this scene is long enough that people will start feeling sympathy for Cersei?
Well, you know, the thing
in
about
the book, I don't want to say I felt sympathy, but I didn't want it to go on. I wanted her to get to the Red Keep. I think she should suffer. She's done terrible things. She's had people killed, all this stuff.
One thing that I was expecting
but
to see.
I don't want it to go on.
And we only see the result of, but we don't actually see it happen, which is good, is, of course, she's walking in these horrible streets barefoot. And we see at one point she's bloody, but we never see her step on anything. We don't see her get that, which would have been very horrific. Right. I was waiting for that, and I thought, oh, okay, they're not going to do the bloody feet. And then we just see the bloody feet, and then we have to assume. So that would have been another step, to see her step on broken glass and
I do have to say that even though Cersei is somebody who deserves a little bit of comeuppance.
Yeah. A little bit.
I think what the show did an amazing job of is I've understood her motives the whole time. And, you know, there's always a reason for her to have – when Marjorie came in, then you felt a twinge. I'm not going to say actual full sympathy for her, but you understood kind of why she was fighting so hard for – you know, to maintain her position. And so I did feel for her during this.
Well,
loss,
is there anybody that you don't understand? I mean, I understand what Stannis was doing too, and he felt righteous in his causes, but that didn't make me feel any sympathy for him when he burned his daughter.
No, I'm glad that he died. I thought he should have died worse for what he did to his daughter.
If he's dead, and I keep saying if because I didn't see him die.
He's dead.
But that's the end of House Baratheon. You know, this credit sequence begins with the fall of the dragon to the stag. And House Baratheon, there are no stags left anymore. Maybe the bastard Gendry. Well, that's a good point. Tommen is technically still a Baratheon. That is a good point.
Yeah.
But we didn't see Tommen. I think, and this doesn't matter one way or another, but I think, if I understand this correctly, this is them digitally placing Lena Headey's head and face on the body of a model who did this. So I don't
think I wouldn't be surprised, because at this point in the show, I mean, as far as acting,
she doesn't need to do
it. No, as acting wise goes, I mean, you have to get, you know, when you sign someone on and you expect there to be nudity, you get them to sign to that in the contract.
Right.
And otherwise, there's no way someone is like 4 years in goes, they're like, can you give us some nudity? You just say, no, I can't give you any nudity. Or you say this, you say, yes, can you give me $30,000, you know.
No, I would like to know what happens to this septa. She's now the person I hate the most on this show, I guess.
Well, Cersei kept...
I only have one thing to say for you about your shame.
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 Cersei. Where's the bell?
Shame.
So much shame.
Shame.
So much shame.
Cersei keeps saying to this septa, the last thing you'll see is my face before you die. And so maybe that's foreshadowing. Maybe that's true.
Yeah, I'm rooting for that. I actually thought they were going to carve the thing into her forehead. That's what I was
fearing. Oh, my God. The seven-pointed star of the faith of the seven.
So,
oh.
I'm glad they didn't do that.
This scene was just brutal enough. Yeah. Cersei didn't break until she got to the end.
The only
and then
thing
she
was
broke.
She was looking high up. And I kept thinking when she got here, oh, she's going to have to keep walking up and up and up. But no, she didn't.
They kind of cut. They cut from that. She's at the lower level. She still have to walk up to the Red Keep and stuff. This is an interesting season because we never actually saw the throne room or the Iron Throne in any scenes in the season at all. How's that for bizarre?
The throne was on tour.
She walks.
There's Pycelle, who's like, don't tell me he's not letting his eyes wander.
All right. So, well, let's just get to the three people who are waiting for her, four in a second. But it starts with Uncle Kevin, who is barely a presence on the show, but earlier this season he was on the small council and he's like...
And he told her to piss off, but at the same time, would he allow this with all of the...
The house, to see his house beaten like this, he doesn't look happy. Pycelle, I don't know if he looks happy or because Cersei has treated him terribly for many years.
Yeah, it's true.
But he does look at her, and then who comes up but Qyburn. Qyburn throws some clothing around her, And Qyburn, was I the only one who kind of giggled at this line where it's like he says, it's good to have you back.
Yeah, yeah, like nothing's been wrong. Like,
where you been?
You'll be okay. Everything's fine. It's like, hey.
I saved all your newspapers.
Looking good, kid.
Right.
No, Qyburn, not known for his bedside manner.
So now where is Tommen? Why isn't Tommen here?
Well, right. You wouldn't want Tommen to see his mother come in.
No, but once
like
you
this.
Drape her.
Even like that, you want her to be cleaned up first. So now we see, well, maybe this is Tommen in the armor.
It could be.
The newest member
Qyburn
of the King's Guard.
Has been doing all sorts of experiments, and maybe this is Tommen who's going to be quiet. Then you know what? You know what? Mork says he thinks it's the mountain. I think it's Tommen.
It could be. You're absolutely
right. All right. Now, this newest member of the King's Guard, who's apparently taken an oath of silence.
Yes.
Thank God. And
Qyburn hasn't been able to fix that yet. Right. He's like, by the time you're okay, I'm going to get the voice thing going.
Right. But let's talk about a couple of things. He's unlike every other King's Guard member, where you can see their mouth, kind of see their face, his mask has been sewn shut because we don't want to see that.
We don't want to see that.
Now, one good thing is if you kind of slow it down and watch it, that just the last look that Cersei gives,
that she's back.
She is like,
she's back.
She is going to, there is going to be a conflagration.
Oh, well, and she sees how now with the mountain here. With new Kingsguard, silent Kingsguard member here.
Tommen!
So he picks her up, and Qyburn says, you know, he's taken a holy vow of silence, and he has sworn that he will not speak until his grace's enemies are dead, and the evil has been driven from the realm. And if there's one thing that could kill a lot of her enemies, it's a freaking Frankenmountain.
It's a giant.
Also a Franken-Tommen.
Right.
Or, I don't want to get anybody's hopes up, but Qyburn's been around for a little while, perhaps. Franken-Joffrey?
No.
That's the only thing who could save this realm, that's
I
for
believe
sure.
We just saw the answer to the question, where is Littlefinger?
He drank some of Qyburn's tea.
Hashtag, where in the world is Littlefinger?
Oh, poor Littlefinger.
All right, so we've got one location left to get to, and it's probably the happiest location of them all.
Everything's going great there.
Oh, my Lord.
They escaped a battle. Sam lost his virginity. Things are going so well. It's just nice to end the show on an up note.
He's got that sexual healing.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't know why John assumes that it happened right after he got beat up. John was gone for a while.
That's true.
Sam could have said, like, basically every flat area in your office, John.
Don't touch.
Just stay away.
It's been gone. Sam, if we know Sam, he sent a raven.
So John is telling Sam the story of Hardhome. He's like, listen, this guy, he raised his arms and tens of thousands of people stood up. And Sam,
I still don't know why he does not. It feels like we should at least see him express this to the other members of the Night's Watch, so they might at least get a chance to believe him that shit is going to hit the fan.
Yeah.
Well, what can they do? They talk about Dragonglass and Valyrian steel, aka rumored to call Dragon Steel. He says, "Hey, that Dragonglass we had, it's at Hardhome. We're not going to get that." And he asks Sam, "How many Valyrian swords are there in the Seven Kingdoms?" Sam says, or John says, not enough. And so you realize, oh, dear God, this is crazy.
And again, every time they kill somebody, they're just adding to their army.
Right. And in a bit of foreshadowing, John says he's the first Lord Commander in history who sacrificed the men of the Night's Watch to save wildlings. And so, hey, good work, John.
Well, maybe it'll work out.
Well, I'm glad you've got that optimism.
But can I ask a question here?
And please do.
You know, and so the Night's Watch has been long, long neglected, and so maybe they don't have too much respect for, you know, the Iron Throne, whatever throne there is. But the Hand of the King is Davos, right?
I mean, the Hand of King Stannis is Davos Seaworth, right?
And he's there,
right?
It seems like maybe they wouldn't do something, you know, they wouldn't air so much dirty laundry while the Hand of the King is there.
Don't fight in front of the help. Right, yeah,
exactly.
you know, you
Or the guy who
well, especially,
writes the check.
Especially since they might be concerned. At that point, they don't know what's going on with Stannis. They could assume that he would take over Westeros. It feels like they know that Stannis was pro-Jon.
Right.
Sure. So it's curious what happens, but let's not get to that yet.
Let's get to the happiest moment in the episode.
And also what we predicted before, what we were talking about, it seemed like there was some foreshadowing, talking about the library several times. And we see that Sam and Gilly are, I like to say, a GTFO, getting the French out of
Castle Black and the
he
Wall.
He makes a smart pitch to Jon Snow. It's always great to be good buddies with your boss when you're asking for time off or vacation. Right?
That's true.
Right?
That's Bubba, can I have some time off?
You've had seven weeks off.
All right. And the strain is starting up. So
I need to rest up.
Strain is starting up. So Jon says, hey, Sam, you're the only friend I've got here. You're the only one who could give me advice. Sam pitches a guy named Ed, who we've seen as a kind of supporting player in all these scenes, but Jon kind of laughs it off. But Jon lets Sam, Gilly, and baby Sam go. Is that our happy moment in this episode of just terribleness?
I guess it is, and maybe sure. We should have wondered at that point. Because what's funny is a few episodes ago, I was worried. I thought Jon would be gone a long time, and Sam and Gilly were going to have to get out quick, or they were going to meet a bad end.
Right.
And instead, in just a very short period of time, we have a reversal that they get out, and not like – the funny thing is they wait until Sam leaves because he's such a badass.
He is a badass.
We can't do anything while Samwell's here.
And how about Sam's good friend Ghost the Direwolf? Why wasn't he around?
Yeah, I was thinking Ghost would come in at some point.
Right, we've already had this season we had Deus Direwolf. And mm-hmm. the Deus Ex
Dragon. Fair enough.
Yeah, this time.
So they couldn't do it again? Yeah. They've done it too many times? So Sam and Gilly leave, and once again, I want to say that's our happy ending. Our happy ending happens.
And episode.
Right. If it had ended here, a.k.a. 12 minutes into the episode. They leave 12 minutes into the episode, we might have had a happy ending. So did you guys know we were going to see Jon again? What did you guys suspect was going to happen?
Yeah, I figured we'd spend a little more time up there and learn a little more about the amazing events of Hardhome.
Right.
Ramifications.
There would be a plan. Because
but there's been zero response to
what's
it.
What's slightly weird is
they're
is
not
this,
ringing
is
the
that,
bell. I mean,
is that why wouldn't you, if you're going to be that upset with Jon, just don't let the wildlings and him through the wall. Why let him in and then...
Or don't send off
because
your...
there's so many more wildlings than once they let
no,
them
in. No,
but
why even... Why not kill Jon before he even goes off? Why
well,
why
maybe
wouldn't...
at that point because he just won and you don't... He just won the election, so you don't know how many people are on your side, how many people are on his side. It's not until this point when you can actually... Maybe that was it. Maybe until the wildlings actually came back and came through, then there was enough disgruntlement that they could do it without having a huge rebellion.
But that doesn't make any sense to me because everybody who was there who came back saw... the ice guy do what he did.
And I agree.
Jon was right. So for this to happen now, it just doesn't make any sense to me. If it was going to happen, it should have happened before they even went
up. And I agree with you. I agree with you too. So are you thinking this is just another guy, you know, George R. R. Martin? Hey, here's a guy people like, and they won't expect this because it'd be so screwed up if I killed him. So you know what? Boom, he's the perfect person to kill.
It's another horrible thing happening for reasons that don't really make sense, which has been frustrating whole year. Sansa's wedding.
But I think this is one – earlier you pointed out, Bubba, that a lot of the things that Mork was not happy with this season were things that didn't happen in the book, whereas this is something that happens in the book.
Well, once again, I don't like spoiling things, but everything, even if it happened in the books, this season is the first season where everything, the context is different.
Are they, you know, sort of upending our expectations and that's a good thing? Or are they sort of, are they purposely defying us and therefore kind of cheating on us. In other words, when we have these, when you have
are these shocks kind of for shock's
fantasy,
sake?
Fantasy and science fiction thing where you're kind of like you're breaking the covenant there, with the reader, and or the watcher,
right?
You know what I mean, to do these things.
Well, guys, let's hold off on John's death just for one second. I want to get to the beginning part of this when we return to Castle Black. Is Davos is begging John for men. And he's like, the wildlings will help. And John's like, he burned Mance. They'll never fight for Stannis. And Davos is begging, begging, begging. And he's like, look, if they're going to live in our kingdoms, they've got to fight in our wars. And John and he are having a very passionate argument when who comes
which
in
the
game.
Which would have been interesting to hear how it worked out, but it's so pointless that I guess we just ended it.
But why wouldn't John say to the hand of the king, hey, do you know what I just saw? I just saw some fucked up shit with a crazy translucent guy in a Nuru suit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why wouldn't he say that to the hand of the king?
And
if,
so
if
this
it's
not is the, we don't know. Catfish pointed this out earlier. This is the first time we've seen Melisandre broken.
Yes, she is.
She doesn't even have a line. She looks at Davos, and she lets Davos know all hope on their cause is lost.
But what she neglects to say is that
I burned your little friend.
I burned your closest friend, made your closest friend's mother kill herself, and basically abandoned
my king.
Your king and my king.
Right. Yeah. How?
What do you think Melisandre's? This is an interesting character, and we don't spend much time with her, but when you have a religious / witch fanatic who believed in the Lord of Light above all else, and then what happens to a religious fanatic when all their belief gets taken from them?
Well, do you think she does no longer believes that she's going to be on
the battlements of Winterfell
and the
Bolton
banner
coming down?
Come down.
At that moment, I don't think she believes.
Yeah, no,
at that
broken.
Moment, she's broken.
Yeah, she is broken. And let's just put it this way as well, too. There's like, for her to do her magic, she's going to run out of
King's
people
blood.
Right.
to burn for her magic. So
Well, she knows he's not the king anymore, so whose blood is she going to use?
She could have either seen a vision or just known he's screwed, but basically she abandoned him one way or the other and doesn't really care about him because, as you say, what's most important to her is her faith, and she's lost it now.
And Davos, he doesn't get to put up any tears. We follow John back into his office.
And we think he's getting what Raven's reports about the battle, right?
About Winterfell?
He could be getting that. Remember, he sent out some scrolls asking for men. He could be getting scrolls back that say, no men for you. He's just absolutely miserable. And he's brought a ray of hope by little Ollie.
Little Ollie, who finally, as I said, it's been foreshadowing about seven different significant looks.
We
from
say
Ollie
it's not foreshadowing,
scene.
Five shadowing. It's seven shadowing.
It's seven shadowing.
Stink
that
eye
is true.
Ollie, they call him.
Yeah, exactly.
But he comes in, and what is terrible is because John does get stabbed in the books. I knew this was a ruse, and it is the worst painful ruse
but
ever.
It's smart to give us the in the previews with Benjen.
Right.
So it's like, oh, Benjen's important. We need to remember about Benjen. So
was he in The Hobbit?
It's sort of a reverse.
Was that guy in The Hobbit?
No, but Littlefinger was. Okay,
okay,
moving on.
Let's keep moving on. So John is brought outside, and he's like, yeah, this wildling who knows
why is
about
this guy?
Uncle Ben.
Why is he?
Alistair Thorne.
He's First Ranger. Why is he there? Shouldn't he be out doing something?
He could be out ranging, but instead they bring John to a cross.
It says traitor, and I'm like, oh, who is the traitor?
Someone's
what's
there.
Underneath the cross,
Benjen
right?
Stark.
And then all of a sudden it's like.
And Alistair Thorne stabs John, and he says,
For the watch.
So these guys, you may not agree with it, Mork. You may not think it makes any sense, but they all say for the watch.
They think
they're doing this
to
uphold the honor of the Night's Watch.
It's totally stupid because these people who John convinced to come over, these wildlings who presumably might have some fealty towards him,
who outnumber them.
They let him in, and then they kill the only guy that they'll listen to.
Right.
Seems a little short-sighted.
It could be. Are we going to see Big Red?
Tormund Giantsbane. So make some predictions. You think Tormund's Giantsbane's going to be happy about his
Melisandre
buddy?
Melisandre was going to come in and give him one too for the Night's Watch.
Yeah, she's really really changed sides. No, I think I think Giantsbane is going to eat little Stink Eye Ollie next season. I look forward to it.
You think?
No, he waits for a really long time. I thought he might say for his family.
Right. I did too. The I thought fans, he might say yeah. for yeah, my yeah, village, yeah. for yeah. my family. Yeah.
But no, he's a member of the Night's Watch now. You know what? He thought the deal was great.
Right.
The deal is hang out with a bunch of murderers, rapists, and thieves, not be able to hang out with ladies, and basically we're the first line of defense for mm-hmm. anybody. And he thought, sign me up.
Sign me up, baby.
Shushing.
Here we go.
And so, yeah.
It's brutal.
It's brutal. It's the most painful way to end a season. This is it, Catfish.
Okay, well, I'm just going to put a little thing in here so you can say whatever you want, and you can not have it if you want. But sure. Again, I always think it's okay to talk about things that happened in the book when we're way past that point, or we're past that point.
Okay,
you know what I mean? Because it doesn't things that can't happen. And in the book, in the books, there are some people who have come back from death. In the show, there's people who have come back from death. They believe in the
So you think Melisandre may save him like a guy who died seven times?
The guy who died seven times.
Well, that was back in season three. We met Thoros of Myr, the priest, and we met Beric Dondarrion, who sure enough had died six times and fought the Hound, and he was brought back that sixth time. What happened is Thoros of Myr, who is a priest of the Lord of Light, he came up and said some prayer, and Beric came back. We have Melisandre, who met Thoros of Myr when she went to go get Gendry. She met Thoros of Myr. She saw...
She's got to know he's got King's blood.
She certainly could suspect he might have King's blood.
Well, she gave him... There was the whole you-know-nothing Jon Snow, so, you know, so she knows stuff.
So my only question is this. Do you feel it's possible that even though I think it's kind of a cheat... That some of the – that in the books they brought back some characters from death because mm-hmm. I feel like when somebody dies, it's like we mourn them and we move on. It's a cheat to be able to bring somebody back. Do you think that they might exercise this for Jon, who's a major character in the show and who there's still lingering questions about who his parents are.
Right.
That are maybe important for the show.
Well, they've laid the groundwork that if – suddenly, Melisandre says, oh, Thoros brought somebody back from life. Let me try. Maybe they've laid the groundwork to where they could do it.
Well, if anyone can do it, I mean, she gave birth to a Smoky Stannis baby.
Please, don't say smoke. It's say a shadow.
Oh, sorry. A mesquite shadow baby.
Yes, perfect.
So, but I would like to see Jon Snow come back on the side of Dr. Iceman. Because that would be awesome.
Yeah.
He'll join.
He's joining the White Walkers.
Well, he's joining Joffrey, who turned into the Night's King.
No, well, is he the Night's King? I thought he was.
No spoilers.
I thought he was Frank and Joffrey.
No spoilers.
No, that's Frank and Littlefinger.
Frank and Littlefinger.
And folks, we're going to try to avoid spoilers. If you don't want to know, once again, in that fourth book, Sam leaves for Old Town with Gilly and Baby Sam at the beginning of the fourth book. So there are many chapters about Sam on his journey. So there's still spoilers out there.
It is not, as I saw them leave, knowing how Sam has basically lucked his way through being alive at this point, it is not safe on the roads.
No.
For anybody.
Right. Absolutely not.
Or for book characters who are still alive, because in this episode, there were a lot of book characters who are still alive in the books who definitely don't appear to be alive anymore on the show.
Wow.
I just hope Sam has AAA.
All right, let's get...
I hope that he can make it down there without someone eating his horse to stay alive.
All right, we've got to do another giveaway. So this is going to be our second prize.
Ooh.
This is for a special poster of Arya and the Hound as a little children's book. It's a unique piece of art, a $35 value. Catfish, I want you to reach deep into the bowl, and let's pick our second winner here on the Joffrey Podcast.
I'm gonna go deep into the bowl.
Yeah, have many, many names on the drawing. Let's see.
Here comes Justice.
And it is NVSYDIE. Never Say Die.
Ooh, I think this is an iTunes review, so we're going to have to find good old Never Say Die. Never Say Die, you've just won a poster from Arya and the Hound.
Very quickly, I will say, we give people, you know, we do do these some episodes in the off season where,
right,
where we again reinforce the love of Joffrey. And basically, if we haven't heard from the winners with it before we do our next off season show, we are going to keep all the people and the names in the bowl. And if no one claims the gift, we will pull again in the first off season episode.
If I had a better vocabulary, I could accurately describe how magnificent this bowl is, guys. It's simply stunning.
All right, so before we give away our final grand prize and we name our Joffreys of the season, I want to give a shout out to some of these great, great, great Twitter responses we've gotten and to some of the iTunes reviews. First up, from the U.S. store, we have somebody who goes by the name of Ally Ho. That's A-A-L-L-Y-H-O. She gave us a 5-star review on iTunes. She says, "Best of the best" is the title of the review. She says, "This is the only podcast I give the double D's to."
Double D's?
Don't delete. So I can double S.
Double S.
Save for seconds. She gives us LL.
LL.
Lots of love from this LL.
Loyal listener.
Heck yeah. Alice H. Thank you so much, Alice H.
Right,
that is a great review.
Who's prettier than Alice H.? Nobody.
Nobody. We got 3 more from the U.S. iTunes store. So, Catfish, why don't you read this next one from Romy?
I want to say it's Romy.
Romy, sorry.
Romy 134 gives it 5 out of 5 beheadings.
Whoa.
That's the title of it.
Thank you.
It's magic.
I am a longtime book reader of A Song of Ice and Fire, and once the show came out, I looked for a podcast to enjoy. I remember searching and noticed this podcast and thinking to myself, no way, and tried a few others.
No.
2 years later, I came across Podcast Winterfell during their reading of the books. I quickly noticed and found myself wishing that their guest Bubba was on their podcast more often. Then they mentioned he had a podcast of his own.
Hey.
I listened to one episode and was hooked. This is the first time I've ever left a review for anything.
Thank you.
And I must say that I love the character Robb Stark. Pour some out for him.
Pour one out for Robbie Stark.
I hope you don't mind. Because of him, I am a double S.
Double S?
Stark sympathizer.
Whoa. Oof.
Either way, I love the podcast, even going back to the first episodes, and are now a double L.
Wow.
Loyal listener, yeah. Thank you so much.
That
we have another review from the iTunes store. Mork, why don't you read this one?
From the U.S. or the United Kingdom?
U.S., right here.
Here we go. This is from Fat Moster, or hey. Moster.
Hey, Fat Moster.
Fat Moster.
We love you. The best Game of Thrones podcast in the world.
Woo.
Clearly.
Thank you.
It's a 5-star review.
5-star, baby. I've listened to countless Game of Thrones podcasts, and not a one can measure up to the Joffrey of podcasts.
Whoop, whoop. Woo-hoo.
Much like evil Uncle Tyrion and anyone in Westeros. This podcast is told from the perspective of true Joffrey loyalists, and we quickly learn how almost the whole story was altered to make Joffrey out to be a villain.
The shameful TV.
Instead of the one true ruler of the Seven Kingdoms.
Heck yeah.
Whether it is an exclusive unreleased POV chapter, the holiday special, or reviewing current episodes, I always find myself laughing at all the cold, hard facts.
They're cold and they are hard.
No comment. I'm just going to keep going. The hosts are what I would like to call Triple H.
Triple H.
Hilariously honest hosts.
Oh, thank you.
At Fit and Trim, Bubba is the most knowledgeable Game of Thrones expert in the podcast world.
Woo-hoo.
Wow. And slays on the book reviews for Podcast Winterfell.
Thank you.
CJ G-Man 67, otherwise known as Catfish, is a famous actor and our 67th favorite CJ G-Man. Easily my favorite podcast. I'm jealous you'll be able to start from the very beginning and listen with virgin ears. Skip ahead. Whether you are a SS Surly Stark, a loyal straightener of the unstraighteners, or a casual fan of Game of Thrones, you will absolutely love this podcast. Why are you still reading this? I don't know. It's my job. Start listening to the Joffrey podcast immediately. I am your king.
Oh, boom. Wow. That is beautiful.
That is, boy.
Wow.
We have
wow.
the best double L's ever. Our loyal listeners. We got a couple more. I've got to burn through real quick. The last one from the U.S. store is a 5-star review. It's from Mary D. ATX. And it's titled, "So there's a lot of Game of Thrones podcasts out there, and many of very good. But the Joffrey podcast stands out for the host's fantastic mix of humor and insight. It's almost good enough for me to declare my allegiance to the one true king, Joffrey, Joffrey Lannister, Baratheon. Oh, wait, thank you so much,
it's
Mary.
It's almost good enough.
Almost.
Yeah. You gave 5 stars.
She was waiting for you to join in more.
Can't get any better.
We got over
now
the
now it's 5 stars. You know what I liked about Fat Moster was, again, if you just joined us either this season or maybe the middle of last season, we do have some episodes up where we do the Joffrey POV chapters, where we do – we had an episode where we mourned Joffrey.
Right.
We had a Christmas special. Those are all very fun episodes. They're not show specific,
right?
But there's a lot of a joy to be had in there.
There is. We got a couple more reviews, one from the United Kingdom store and one from the Australian iTunes store. So, Catfish, let's hear that UK store.
Okay, the UK one, the title is Don't Let This Dog Die.
Whoa.
The 5-star review by Mighty_Fine_C.
Hey, hey.
Giving this 5 Joffreys out of 5, so Bubba and Catfish, keep it going.
Thank you.
Consistently straighten the unstraighteners and keeping the listeners smiling throughout.
We try.
Yeah, yeah.
Even in an episode like this. Ouch. So let's go to the Great Kingdom of Australia for our final iTunes review. And Mork, would you please do the honors?
This comes from King Joffrey for Prime Minister of Australia.
All right.
That's the title.
The title. Otherwise known as Kremen 2.
Hey, hey.
Kremen 2 is also the guy who kicked out Johnny Depp's dogs.
Oh, no.
The funniest Game of Thrones podcast around by Catfish and Bubba.
Thank you. The funniest, that's right.
Yes, there are some which give more information, but none as funny as this one.
Thank you.
I discovered it after the demise of Podcast Winterfell and have now downloaded every old ep as an episode that I can get.
Thank you.
I have become an LL.
Loyal listener.
I am just waiting for the scene in Series 6 where King Joffrey wakes up and discovers the last couple of series were nothing but a bad dream, so he's still alive and can put these pretenders to the throne, to the sword himself.
Yes, I completely
agree. Oh, and that is Peter.
Peter in Australia.
Oh, yeah.
We love your reviews. Real quickly, let's get to some Twitter responses we've had to this episode. And I have to be honest, this episode was such a downer, I have not gotten many tweets back.
Wow.
I've got one from a great LL loyal listener, Ricky S. Young, who's at Ricky S. Young on Twitter. He says his Joffrey of the week, he goes to multiple people. Alaria, Brienne, and the Night's Watch for, quote, wiping out potential usurpers.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, my
Lord.
That
is good, Ricky. You put it in beautiful words.
Yeah, we need quality usurpers.
Okay, so guys, let's keep going. We're going to get to our last contest winner in a bit, but guys, we've had now 5 seasons.
Right.
Let's rank the seasons out. I've polled our listeners on Twitter and got some great responses. Let's hear it, your favorite to your least favorite. I'll go first. My favorite season is still the first. It's the season where Joffrey becomes king. It's a tight story. I think it built to a great climax of Joffrey wiping out a usurper. That is my favorite one. My second favorite season is season 4. Many people think, well, what happened to Joffrey in the second episode should knock it down. But Joffrey threw the realm the greatest party ever, and I was so happy.
Pigeon pie.
Amen. I was so happy till the end, and I thought the fallout from King Joffrey's death on the show was really excellent and great drama. I'm going to put season 3 at the third, the second season as my 4th favorite season, and this season we just went through, which was so brutal to watch, season 5, my least favorite season of them all. Do you guys have rankings? Let's hear them.
I largely agree with you, except I would say season 5 is my 6th. Favorite season.
Very good, Mork.
No, season 1 is amazing. I would say season 2, because that's when we got to see all of the potential usurpers.
Yeah, that was a good season.
That was it was nice to see Joffrey in his prime, kicking usurper, you know what?
Yeah,
buttocks.
How about you, Catfish?
Well, I'm going to go first. I'm going to start with my Joffrey-centric ranking of the seasons goes like this.
That's it.
First of all, it's season 4. People are shocked. Season 4, that's the season that Joffrey died.
Right.
No, that's the season that Joffrey enacted his master plan and pretended to be dead so that he could go out and root out every single usurper. Now, whether he's come back as the Night's King or he's come back as someone else, maybe whether he's come back as Qyburn's strange experiment. I happen to think that he's you know, just cruising the Seven Kingdoms, kicking ass left and right. So that's my first, my favorite season.
Okay.
Season number one, my second favorite season.
Cool.
Beautifully done. I say that only because I never thought that this could come out as a series, and to see it so well done in that first season,
yeah,
it was just impressive. And then I'm going to have to go season two, then right. season three.
Okay.
And I'm going to give this – I'm going to say this is my least favorite season only because, as I say, I love this episode, but I don't know where it's going. And I may be wrong to have expectations and want to see these expectations come through, but I don't know how it's all going to come together.
Well, I will say this. I mean, seasons one through four have been so well done and so spectacular that I am certainly willing to believe that these guys know stuff that we don't and are going to pull it all together.
Well, but the curious thing is maybe they know things that we don't, but then maybe George R. R. Martin didn't know things and they asked him questions and he just kind of made up things. I will say that this, that to me, that – maybe it's unfair to put the season as my least favorite season because I thought Hard Home was the most impressive.
That was great. Sure.
Most impressive of any of their big episodes.
Okay. All right.
It was an amazing spectacle.
Oh, fantastic.
In the response I got from our listeners on Twitter, season one just barely edged season three for their favorite season of all time. So it went 1, 3, 4, 2, 5. Everybody's tough on this season. Sometimes you think people would love the most recent thing they've seen, but I think the five was kind of so far back. Like two was pretty far back, but five was just so obviously fifth, it was a bit preposterous that people have had a hard time with this season.
Also, I think as many of the listeners are book readers too, and I think even though they do a lot of things better in the book.
You guys keep referring to these books.
Right.
Yeah, okay. That's where
Littlefinger is. Finish your point, Catfish.
Is that even though I have said for a long time that I kind of trust these guys more than Jar Jar Martin just because some of the things he's done have driven me crazy. Instead of bringing things to a close, he's adding new vital characters, you know, five books in. I do wonder if the fact that they're going away from the books now is starting to upset more people. You can't help but if you've read the book to compare and contrast. And I think in a series like this where they have to cut things down, they have to shorten storylines, you know, it's hard for you to understand that as a book reader instead of saying, well, it was better in the books. Yeah, it's better in the books. If they actually filmed the books as it were, it would be hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars.
Okay. I think that what I've said this before on this podcast, they did have to condense, they did have to shorten, they did have to kind of clean up some of the meandering that George R. R. Martin did in the books. But the one thing the books have always done is they've always made sense. Many of these complaints that Mork rightly made in this episode, and people have made all season, where it's like, wait a minute, why is Littlefinger doing this? Why does he have to marry Sansa if he's just going to come in and fight the winner of the Bolton Stannis Baratheon fight? You know, he could have done that without Sansa being there. You know, there's a lot of it that just didn't make sense, and I think that came from their attempt to tighten it. And once again, five is the low, in my opinion. Guys, let's go to our final drawing before we name our Joffreys of the season. Let's go to our final drawing.
Okay, and you get to pick this one, Bubba.
This is for a game of season four of Game of Thrones, one of your favorite seasons, apparently, listeners of Game of Thrones. The Blu-ray digital download copy of season
DVD
four. DVD
as well.
Of season four. So I've pulled it out of the bowl, and we see that it is. Oh, my God. You're not going to believe it. It's one of our double L loyal listeners.
No way.
It is Holly Hunt
Pants.
Oh,
Holly Hunt Pants.
Holly Hunt Pants, who has won a t-shirt before.
I believe Holly has been following us since very close to the beginning.
I can't believe it either. Thank you so much, Holly. We'll be mailing this out. Winners will be mailing this out. Obviously, our second winner from iTunes, Never Say Die. You're going to have to contact me with your information.
And if Never Say Die doesn't pick it up, then we'll draw again in our next episode.
All right, so we're going to end this podcast. We're going to end this extra long podcast.
Well, there was a lot to talk about.
There was. We're going to end this extra long podcast with our Joffreys of the season. I'm going to go first.
Okay.
And I think we had from Ricky Young a great tweet talking about who his Joffrey was. But my Joffrey of the season, my MVP of the season, is White Walker Joffrey. It is the Night's King. The highlight of the season was him raising his arm up and like Joffrey, bringing the dead back to life. And so that was, I had a lot of problems with this season, but that was my favorite part of it. White Walker Joffrey, you are my Joffrey of the season. Congratulations.
Wow, beautiful. That is great. That is great.
Beautiful. It's beautiful. I'm going to say that my Joffrey of the season is somebody who we got to see a lot of in this episode. But she had a tough road, especially today, and it's Joffrey's beloved mother, the Queen Mother, Cersei Lannister.
Wow, that's a great pick. Why is that, Mork?
I think she has become my favorite character. And,
wow, cool.
I am totally rooting for her because she's just stuck it out. And, you know, this game is not for for the weak-minded. And she's a tough cookie. So she is my favorite.
Heck yeah.
That is awesome.
That is a great choice,
Mork. That's a good choice. Yeah.
There's a tear coming down everybody's eyes right now.
All right, Catfish, let's hear it. Joffrey of the Seas.
Well, I'm going to go back for a little history, and I want to talk a little bit about the Battle of Blackwater.
Oh.
Okay.
Now, when that battle came down, when everything was heavy was hitting it,
yeah.
Joffrey realized there was one place to be.
One place.
To lead. And that was anywhere not close to the battle.
That's right.
Basically.
Uncle Stannis should have learned that.
So basically, for my Joffrey of the week, I want to give it to a person who it looked perilous for all season, but by the end of the season, he was on his way out of danger with a hot babe by his side. So Samwell Tarly gets my Joffrey of the season.
Samwell was...
He is out.
That was very, very smart. I completely agree. All right, guys, it has been a wonderful podcasting experience. We always say we do this podcast for Joffrey. Listeners, when I think about you listeners and the great tweets, the great iTunes reviews, the great conversations we've had with you, I think to myself, Joffrey would love it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's like the spirit of Joffrey flows through them.
Right.
It's worthy of Joffrey.
Guys, we've got another podcast going right now. It's based on BBC America's Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell. It's called Lost Hope. Go to iTunes, download it, watch that show. As I said earlier, it gets dark, but it's not going to leave you suicidal like this show does.
It's a fun show.
And coming up in July, we're back, just like the Sturgoy. We're back for season 2 of The Strain on FX. Get ready. It's going to be a lot of reenactments. It might be all reenactment all the time, really think about The Strain.
And that one is called Got Your Milk. That's the name
of
that
podcast. Go to iTunes,
download
Got Your Milk. 4, Catfish, how can people contact you on Twitter and tell you their Joffrey of the season?
And I want to thank all my loyal Twitter followers. It has been – that army has grown this year.
It
has. They have been – they are some funny mofos and give out some great tweets. So you can hit me up at CJGman67. As said earlier, your 67th favorite CJGman.
Mork, you are the star of the Got Your Milk podcast. And believe it or not, listeners, if you've been following along, you know Mork has never been on Twitter. Mork, how can people contact you if they agree with you that this episode was a 3, if they want to tell you their Joffrey of the season, how do they do it?
Well, my cell phone is 651-690-2911.
Someone's going to call that number.
That's my childhood number growing up.
This is very exciting because Mork just joined. You have the chance to be – we could give you a prize. If you're the 7th follower of Mork, you get
– So, Mork, do you want to give out your Twitter handle? You don't have to.
Sure, I'd love to. It's just going to take a little while.
Let's hear it.
It's extraordinary, as in extraordinary, but it went all wrong, so it went awry. So it's extra, ordinary.
So good luck finding that.
No, that's a great handle.
It
I love that.
Funny.
Extraordinary.
Yeah.
So you can reach me on Twitter. My name's Bubba. You can reach me at Fit and Trim. That's FitenTrim at Fit and Trim on Twitter. And until His Grace King Joffrey comes back and straightens the unstraightening showrunners, You'll hear us next time on
the Joffrey of Podcasts.